Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. We tried for Bradley Walsh and Paddy McGuinness, but someone got there first. Instead, we've got two cheeky chappies from the Daily Mirror, David Walker and Darren Lewis. Now, chaps, let's start with Marcus Rashford. No laughing matter what's happened to him. Surely he should be in the forward squad, not the under-21s.
Yeah, the first thing that Sam Allardyce is going to learn as England manager is the scrutiny every selection he makes, be it for the squad, as we're looking this week, and by Sunday's team. He's going to be under intense scrutiny to the point that we know, history tells us, an awful lot of managers can't handle it. I feel sorry for Rashford in that you've got the body of work he delivered at the Euros on the promise of last season and then how he started this season where he appears confident and goal scoring, etc. And then you've got other players who disappointed at the Euros and maybe haven't been in the best of form and made it easy for Sam Allardyce to bin them. I think in Rashford's case, he's been dealt a tough, harsh card. He should be in the squad.
In a way, he's almost a victim of managerial ego, Darren?
Well, you see, I slightly, ever so slightly, disagree with the two of you. Initially, I did agree. And initially, I did think he needed to be in the senior squad because he's done all that's been asked of him. But then I started to think, well, perhaps he may be an example of the English mentality where if someone does something well and he bursts onto the scene, stick him in instead of getting him to continue learning his trade. I have no real problem with the idea that he could be in the senior squad, but I just wonder if it's necessarily negative for him to get game time. We've got decent strikers at the moment. We've got Kane, we've got Vardy, Rooney. We don't really know what Sam's doing with
Sturridge.
Him.
Sturridge, do we really know about him
Sturridge,
at the moment?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think as far as Rashford is concerned, he's doing well. But we've done it in the past. Someone does something well for 5 minutes and then we kind of bang for the spotlight and the scrutiny and for him to be thrust into centre stage. And I just wonder with Rashford whether we could be better served guiding him along, nurturing him, developing him. He's got that goal. He scored, you know, came on, coped with the pressure. And it has to be said, you're absolutely right. He has coped magnificently with A, receiving his chance, and B, taking it. Mm. He's given us all a lot of excitement about his potential. He sends that kind of frisson of electricity through fans when he gets the ball in, he runs at defenders. Should we develop that or should we thrust that straight away?
Why can't that be developed, Darren, being with the senior squad, given what he's shown? Is there not a danger that boy feels demoted, demoralised, because what's he done wrong from being called up to the England team?
I don't know if it's
football is a status-driven profession.
Yes.
And, you know, amongst his peers, Rashford has got the opportunity to actually stand out as, you know, the sort of totemic figure, the kid who's really going to make it. Surely we're losing the chance to actually get someone who's a symbol of a successful system.
I take that point, but I would add to it that we at the moment, as a team, as a nation, we're a shambles as a footballing nation. We were bundled out of our last major tournament by a country with supposedly fewer resources to what we have. We have to establish a clearly defined way of playing. We have to get the best out of strikers, who one of whom was a Footballer of the Year and the other was a Golden Boot winner last season. We have to get the basics right before we start looking at making players that kind of figure that could take us to the next level. There is time for Rashford. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing for him not to get that time now.
is there time for Wayne Rooney, or how much time is there for Wayne Rooney? OK, he's got the captaincy, which is usually a bit of a red herring. Mm. 31 nearly. Is he coming towards the end of his natural footballing life at the highest level?
Well, I'm intrigued by something here, Mike, in that both Jose Mourinho and Sam Allardyce has clarified that Rooney shouldn't have been listed as a midfielder, as Louis van Gaal was doing last season and Roy Hodgson used it, that they see Rooney as a selection, as a striker. So we know he doesn't need to be saying the number nine, it could be as a number 10.
Sounds like he's going to be a 10.
As a 10, absolutely, but that's what he is. Where I think Sam's missed a trick, we are, and again, the media probably drives some of this, we are possessed by this need to have to know who is the captain, as if that then makes Rooney a shoo-in. I would now be tempted in the state, and part of this is down to Rooney's status or potential lack of status, to do the captain game by game as we go along. So if Rooney's playing at the weekend, Wayne Rooney can be captain. But if you get to the point, you shouldn't box yourself in because you've created another problem you've got to deal with, which is how do I drop the captain? So at the moment, where we've started, I think Rooney, and again on the back, the Iceland game was a nightmare for all, including Rooney. On the back of the Euros, I can understand why Rooney's still around. But he's not got a long-term future in there as a striker. And I think, I don't say strip him of the captaincy, but let's make it that the armband could be handed round, and that then puts a bit more incentive on Rooney to deliver on a match-by-match basis, which I think is the right way to go.
What about the broader issue, Darren, of Rooney almost being a human roadblock? Because, you know, Sam said that he's going to play him at 10, and he has already identified as Dele Alli will be his backup number 10. Mm. Now, Dele Alli had an absolutely dynamic influence last season. Mm. Why isn't he trusted this season?
I think it's a really good question, and I think it's one that Sam Allardyce is going to have to answer. What it looks at the moment is though he is picking functional teams. He wants teams. He wants defensive solidity. He wants that protection for his back four, so you've got Drinkwater and Dyer. And then, obviously, he wants people to supply the ammunition for his strikers. He's taken the creativity, the fantasy, out of the team. No Barkley, as you say. Dele Alli apparently won't be in the team as well. He looks as though he's going to get more out of Wayne Rooney. That's what he will look to do. And I think it's a really relevant question because Alli has done so well for Spurs last season.
In a number of positions.
Absolutely. So there surely must be a way of integrating him into any team that wants to do well for England. Same for Barkley. I don't agree with the idea that because he had a bad season last time around, or sporadic season, shall we say, you shouldn't look to get him into the first team, build up his confidence and have a side within which you can make the most of Barkley's talents. He scored 2 goals in 4 games for Everton so far this season. He's playing in the form of his life. Get him in there. I think as far as Sam is concerned, what he wants to do, what he does not want to do, is start off negatively. He wants to get the win. He wants to make sure of getting the win. And then I think he wants to drop the fantasy into the team after that. But how does he do it? You say about Wayne Rooney being a human roadblock. I agree with that because he's such a huge figure within the team. The day that he's taken out of the team will be a big day indeed.
I mean, that the Barkley points are good in that. If you looked at the England midfielders so far, Barkley will be ahead of Dele Alli on club form, on club what we've seen so far. Now, I've got to say, if I was an Everton fan, I'd be sitting there thinking, this could work in our favour here.
Well, it will. Ronald Koeman will be delighted.
Absolutely, because he's not going to be going out on all the international trips at the moment. He can work, he can keep him fit there. He's obviously keeping an eye on him. Now, unless Sam has got, there are issues that we're not aware of why he doesn't want him in an England squad, which I'm happy to say, if Sam knows something we don't know, fine. That could be why he doesn't pick him. But on the player's form, if you were looking around the England squad now, Ross Barkley had to be in that squad. He clearly is responding to the guidance and the organisation that Koeman's brought to that Everton team. They're a much tougher team to beat. They're much stronger at the back and they're improving as a collective. They are getting better and he's part of that. So I really think Everton might be one of those teams this season that are going to surprise people, and he's a critical part of it.
Can I just add to that? Sam himself has a little bit of a problem. There's a lot of disillusionment among fans after what happened with Iceland. The international break has come at a time where we're really just getting our feet under the table.
I'm not feeling any love for the international break at all.
Absolutely, absolutely. Sam needs to excite us. He needs to thrill us. You know, is he going to do that without players who like to pick up the ball and run at defences? Is he likely to do that with a functional side that may well grind out the win and it will look good from his point of view because they'll have kicked off with 3 points? I'm not so sure, and I'm not sure that this is going to be a match that's really going to get us all thinking, I can't wait for the next one.
And can I just say one other thing, which is, I think you're creating this, especially with the new manager. He has made a statement there that he doesn't fancy a particular player. You know, in this case, we're talking Barkley, but there are others who've been left out, and they then have to develop. They're not there for the chat this week and we're all mates and, you know, Bradley Walsh is here and he's going to tell some jokes.
What is all that about, by the way?
Well, it's been done before, hasn't it? Don Revie back in the 70s was trying to get a spirit and having entertainment and games and et cetera. So
Kevin Keegan had a card school.
Yeah, he did. but
that might have done more harm than good.
That's right. A few wives on the phone.
maybe they're happy not to be there for Paddy McGuinness and Bradley. I don't know. But the fact is, a serious one, the manager's basically stated he doesn't fancy you as a player. He's left you out. And there is a pride issue and there is a thing of... So when it comes to October, November or into the new year and I'm a couple of crafts and I want to go, do you know what? I might just stay at Everton. I might stick around. I might have a bit of an ankle. You can create a load of problems that could come back to haunt him.
Mm. And with the England team, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, the honeymoon. And let's face it, every England manager has a honeymoon. I get a sense that Sam's won't be that long.
I don't think it will, because I think a lot of people aren't convinced by the way he plays his football, even though, as he says in his book, that's quite unfair, because at a big club, a long ball is a long pass. When he does it, he is accused of being prehistoric and functional. So there are a lot of people within our industry, let's not kid ourselves, who aren't convinced by the idea that he plays a type of football to excite a nation and to maybe compare with the likes of your Antonio Contes and the top managers within Europe who have won things. So he's got it all to prove. That's why this first couple of squads are so big, and that's why the players that he's left out are so significant, because we want those players on the ball, threading passes through to the strikers, giving us that creativity. Instead, he's got worker bees. He's got guys who are going to roll their sleeves up, win the ball, knock it long. And in many people's eyes, that's not the kind of international
And I think the other thing is, Mark, and you're spot on there, but the other side is qualifying isn't enough now.
Yes.
We're used to, England teams qualify for tournaments, whatever the group is. And yeah, there's been a couple of disastrous times. The famous Wally with the Brolly, Steve McLaren in the Croatia game stands out as one. Sam surely can't head down that route of not qualifying when you look at the group. But as a nation and football lovers, everybody's gone, well, hang on. Even Roy Hodgson stormed through that. We go to the finals and look what we got. The payback for having this optimistic view of, oh, we can go and win anywhere now, this is a great England team. Mm. We were found out. So with respects to Sam and the new managers come in, getting from A to B in qualifying isn't the problem. No. And he may actually feel a bit resentful that people aren't heaping more praise on him for getting us there, because I'm sure we will get there. Mm. But that's when the acid test comes and the really sophisticated, different challenge comes of what is it in tournaments that affects England and undermines the whole thing, and we end up coming back in a sense of disgrace.
Bradley Walsh.
What about, you know, if you look at Raheem Sterling, you made a point earlier on, Darren, that sometime in the media, and it's one I'd accept, we're too hard on young players. Now, I thought, especially with Raheem Sterling, he was scapegoated really badly after the Euros. Mm. And you know, on tangential things like the bathroom he, you know, paid for his mum and things like that, which I think is completely out of order and actually utterly irrelevant when we're judging him as a footballer. Sterling, he has shown great character in coming back under Pep Guardiola, hasn't he?
Well, there's talk that Guardiola sent him a text message during the Euros where he said, look, I believe in you, and if you fight for me, I'll fight for you. If you work hard for me, I'll work hard for you. And Sterling has obviously responded to that private dialogue that he has had with Guardiola, and responded by, I think it's 3 assists in 2 games. He's scored goals as well. And that's quite significant, his ability to add goals to his game.
Darren, he would have been, and I've got to say, and Joe Hart has been spared it, but if Joe Hart had been playing as well, and making mistakes in goal. I think Joe Hart and Raheem Sterling probably epitomised things that went wrong in the general supporters' eyes. And if, again, this wouldn't have been Manchester City fans, but I think to the rest of the nation, if you'd seen them playing in your team, in your town, and Sterling saying, miscontrol the ball or Mr. Sit Roger, I think the pearlers they would have got everywhere from, because I think that was the mood of the nation and they would have been scapegoated for that. Big time.
I think as far as Sterling is concerned, however, he's so young and he does still have that potential. And we saw what he did at Liverpool in that triumvirate of Suarez, Sturridge and Sterling. We know that there is some real talent there. There is a player there. And Guardiola knows that too. And I think he wants him to fulfil that potential over the next few years. And I think he'll do that because we're already seeing the signs, A, that his confidence is back, and B, that he can add that cutting edge to his game. And it's really now for Sam Allardyce to be able to harness that within the England team. He has, as we've said, taken the fantasy out with Ali and Barkley. Can he use that, what Sterling has to offer? And I remember in the World Cup, he played 10 against Italy and it was fantastic. But in the subsequent game, Rooney was put in there because there was this big clamour for Rooney to play there. For me, I think Sterling in the 10 could be very, very interesting indeed.
Mm. Bit crowded there now, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
With Pep Guardiola, OK, we're only three games in, but the usual suspects have got maximum points, you know, United, City and Chelsea. What is your initial impression of Guardiola?
Very positive. You can see what he's done. I've got to say, the one that has, say, astonished is too strong, pleasantly surprised me, is how well John Stones has settled in for him, with the fee on his head, with the fact he came out of a Roberto Martinez team, you know, with the issues they had. Fact he wasn't an Everton regular, be it as centre-back or right-back, ended up on the bench. I think what you've seen at Manchester City, where he was put in the team after two or three days training, in he went, and the boys responded. I think there is a degree of work in progress, and clearly the issue will be, and will, some of it could be resolved with the transfer window closing. They have got people that they want to get out the door, because I do think having too many star players, and when you're looking at a squad of 30, the potential for poison around the bit and people who aren't getting picked. And as we know, it's on September 1st, Guardiola's got to name his squad for both the Premier League campaign and the Champions League campaign, with a restriction on how many foreigners can be in there. So two out of three big names, if they've not left with the window, are not going to get games in the Premier League or Champions League. And I think that's when there is the danger for the internal combustion thing to kick in. But I think overall, Mike, so far so good, and you've got to be impressed that the players are buying into what he's teaching them.
You know, we've said it before that big managers make big decisions, Darren. And obviously, he's pushed Joe Hart out of the club. He's having his medical at Torino. What about that as a career move? OK, it's a season loan, different environment, you know, historic club, but the second club in Turin.
Yeah, the second club in Turin. Finished mid-table last season. I think as far as Hart is concerned, I wonder if he's going there because he's almost away from the spotlight of the Premier League, the scrutiny of the Premier League. OK, listen, we are in a global media world at the moment, so it's not going to be difficult for us to get the footage if he slips up at Torino and he doesn't pull up any trees.
We'll be sending people over there anyway, won't we?
Indeed. That said, I think it would be very different there than it would be if he were to go to a Sunderland, if he were to go to an Everton. I remember being on here a couple of weeks ago saying Everton was never a runner because I think as far as Steckelenberg is concerned, Koeman has total faith in him, one of the first players he brought to the club. And he was never interested, and he's since confirmed that. So Torino, it's quite striking, actually. And I know in our paper, the Daily Mirror, we made the point how the mighty have fallen. It's quite striking how Hart, for so long, had been hailed as such an outstanding goalkeeper, and yet no real clubs were beating down City's door to take him.
There is a view, I don't know, I found this during the Euros, that on the continent, that we have this take, Joe's England's number one, Joe's one of the world's, and they didn't see it. Loads of the continental coaches just didn't buy into that. I mean, weirdly, I think Joe might have done Guardiola and Manchester City a favour here, because I think there is a view inside Manchester City, certainly over the weekend, which was, could Joe decide to sit tight, even as number three, if there wasn't a move that appealed to him, and just wait to see what happens? Now, They've signed Claudio Bravo. If he wasn't as good as maybe some people, and he's not seen as one of the world's great goalies, there is a clamour on Manchester City fans who feel that Joe's been harshly treated in the way he's just been dispatched and unrated and put behind Willy Caballero to start this season. OK, if Manuel Neuer or somebody like that had come in, you could see it. But you could see Joe could have sat in the stand watching things unfurl and there could have been a clamour, we want Joe back in the team. Now, this has taken that away for the moment, anyway.
Well, and you're right, because there was that incident in the game where Caballero was injured and the camera immediately panned to Joe Hart on the bench, laughing his head off.
Yeah.
So, and at City, it's obviously by the nature of the football club and the money that's available to them, the problems of having the bomb squad, i.e. the players who are nowhere near the first team, that's at every football club. Yes. But at City, you know, the likelihood is someone like Yaya Toure, who's on more than £11 million a year, is going to be sitting around doing nothing. That's got to be bad for morale.
It is bad for morale, but I think in the real world there are lots of people who would say that they would do exactly the same thing. If a move that doesn't appeal to him...
Let's be honest, we'd all sit around for £11 million a year, wouldn't we?
Well, you do already, don't you?
Mike, it looks, I mean, from the signs coming out of City, and Guardiola was quoted about Yaya over the weekend. Yaya is going to be in the squads of players for selection. Yaya's actually said to him, I don't want to go anywhere, I'm not itching for this. And according to Guardiola, he's trained like a beast, he's been fantastic, he's doing all the way, he's lost weight, so to a degree he's bought into it. But they can't all be accommodated like that. So if we just say, OK, Yaya, you're OK... Funnily enough, Nasri, who was one who was being seen as being on the fringes, he got on at the weekend and was involved in the game. I think, oh, does this mean he could stay? But there's others, the Mangalas of this world are definitely out there. Mm. And if he doesn't get a move, which he could do, he will be outside the centre.
Just to make a point, I think Besiktas and Sevilla have come in for Nasri. I think he'll go, but I agree with you. I think there is a... This transfer window, and I'm going to talk more about that in a bit, but just in general terms, three things we've learned from the last 3 months. Tough decisions have been taken about key players at clubs. Juan Mata, who many people thought would be going, he's stayed and he's managed to knuckle down, but Bastian Schweinsteiger, out, ruthless. Joe Hart, out, ruthless. It's almost a signature, really, of the top managers who are not afraid to make.
So what about Sturridge at Liverpool?
I think that's another one. Klopp is making a statement with him. I think... listen, last week he gave the interview to our paper. We ran it in the Daily Mirror. All about, I don't want to play out wide. He didn't want to do it at Chelsea, which is why he didn't sign a contract there. He didn't want to do it at City, which is why he left. I want to play as a centre-forward. He's a very single-minded, articulate footballer. Whatever people may say about his attitude and his surly, whatever, he doesn't want to play out wide. He makes that point. Klopp said, no problem. No problem whatsoever. At the weekend, bench. Comes on very late indeed. Lots of people interpreting lots from his expression when he didn't come on until the final 2 minutes, Michael. But I think as far as he is concerned, he knows what he can do if he is fit on a regular basis. I think he'll go elsewhere.
Two words that managers hate when they're uttered by players. Don't, won't.
True. And I think the answer came back as, I won't let you, Daniel, pick my team. Mm-hmm. Klopp picks the team. And Klopp will use him as he sees fit. I've got to say, I think Liverpool, looking at their attacking resources, will not be keen to sell him so close to the transfer window, you know, in terms of, let's just do it. I don't think that...
But something's got to give, though, hasn't it? Because I think as far as he is concerned, he's very single-minded. Yeah. He knows he's got a record of 1 in 2 and 2.5, I think it is. Yeah. He is a quality striker if he can remain fit. The onus is on him to maintain his fitness. But Klopp's got... They will butt heads because Klopp won't have, as you say, anyone question... No decent manager will have anyone questioning him publicly. But as far as Sturridge is concerned, he wants to play. He needs to play. Yeah. Otherwise, that competition for England, Kane, Vardy... Vardy's off the mark. Kane always starts slowly, but he'll pick it up again. And you've got Rashford, who we've talked about already. Sturridge needs to start. He doesn't need to be coming on late in games or as an impact sub. It is a big, big couple of days for him because if he's at Liverpool, he's banging trouble.
And what about Jack Wilshere, another one who desperately needs to play?
Absolutely.
37 minutes so far this season. He's going to go out on loan. Would you go to Europe?
Yes. If he could get... and there are things that they'd have to agree in terms of if it's a Champions League club and the potential.
I'm talking of Juventus.
Yeah. Well, if he could get to Juventus and be playing at that level with the medical knowledge and the fitness knowledge they've got at a club like that, I think that would be a great move for Jack, especially if they are saying to him two things. One, Jack, do we really believe you're fit? And that would show in a medical. And two, we are looking to get you on the fit pitch, because there is a view from within the Jack Wilshere camp that he was getting frustrated last season, that he wanted to play more minutes and was actually aware that maybe he didn't deserve to go to the Euros on the basis of his Arsenal work, and was hoping he'd get more time on the pitch. It's not happening for him there. I think it makes sense. Jack's got a load of ability. He is a talented player, but it's just we're left with, well, he's talented and it's potential, and how long ago is it since he had a run of games, you know? And that is the inhibiting thing. Can I just flag one other thing up, because it's just suddenly came to me. Do you know why Sam will have Bradley Walsh and Paddy McGuinness there this week?
No.
Well, you think it's going to be to entertain them, but you forget that Big Sam managed them when they were playing in Football Aid. So Bradley Walsh and Paddy McGuinness are the secret weapons to play for England in the campaign. You watch.
Right. I think they're nearly players, a bit like Jack Wilshere, is that right?
Well, you know, Jack Wilshere, interesting, it's the outlet that Juventus gives him. Because Max Allegri, even though he sold Paul Pogba, he has recalibrated very well. They've won their league, they plundered the league every season, but it's in the Champions League where they haven't done so well, and that's what they're a big target for them. But he still does have fantastic options. He was looking at Isco, and he was looking at Oscar. This is almost a bonus for him. Yeah. But I think as far as Wilshere is concerned, if he can go there and slot into what is a successful team, a team that has quality players all around him, if he can raise his confidence level and supply the ammunition for some top players ahead of him, then why not? You know, I think they've signed Higuain this season. Mm-hmm. They've got Dybala there already.
Sami Khedira's fit and playing again, you know.
I think for Jack Wilshere, it's a no-brainer. And what it will enable him to do is perhaps just, you know, because obviously Xhaka looks a fantastic player already. I was up at Watford against Arsenal last weekend and he did superbly well, Xhaka, and you can already see where their money's gone on the £30 million. Ramsey had a great Euros, and then he looks a good player, obviously. So as far as Wilshere is concerned, I think he does need to go to Juventus, and he may well, as a result of going there, force his way back in at Arsenal and for England as well.
What about Arsenal? I know we can't have it both ways. We can't criticise Wenger for not buying anyone, and then when he spends 50 million on two players, which it looks like he is doing, we say, well, you're panic buying.
No. There is a simple logic to this, Mike. If you look at last season's league table, who finished second? Arsenal. If they were to add to what they had, and they have going to put some more players into their talent pool, they should be being seen as potential champions. Outside one or two members of the media, I don't know any Arsenal fans who are going, we're going to win the league. Mm. There is this feeling of, yeah, we'll slot back into being a top four team. But that really is the expectation we should have if we think that Leicester can't retain it. Arsenal should be looking as the heirs apparent to it. Mm. And I think that's a problem for them.
What's going on at Tottenham? You know, we've got Daniel Levy. He's like sort of a vampire coming out late at night, isn't he? When, you know, the last couple of days of the transfer window, he's making silly bids for people.
Yeah, he probably wakes up.
What about Zaha? £12 million?
Well, Steve Parish came out and gave an interview to National Radio where he basically blew that one to pieces and said that, well, he accused Spurs of doing two things, undervaluing the player and unsettling the player. And the problem for Palace is that Zaha wants to go. So they have an unhappy player at the moment. Right. He's made it clear to Alan Pardew and he's made it clear to the Palace hierarchy he wants to go. I was at Spurs last week. I spoke to a couple of people and the understanding is, yes, Pochettino, despite what people may say about Zaha, Pochettino sees him as fitting the profile of the player that he wants to sign. Young, English, under 24, and with the ability to supply ammunition for his strikers. Still very quick, but his final ball perhaps needs some work. Pochettino believes he can work on that. As for what's happening with Spurs, it's very similar to the end of last year's transfer window when they went in hard for Sadio Berahino and they got caught in that row with West Brom over him. Same sort of thing happening here with Palace, because they sold, Palace sold Yannick Bonassi for £28 million. That's the kind of figure that you're talking about. Whether we agree with it, and let's not kid ourselves, and anyone listening, we don't think Bonassi is a £28-30 million player. But that's what Palace would look at for him. Yeah. That's the market. I think as far as Spurs are concerned, because of the restrictions on their spending, they've got the new stadium and everything else, they are not looking at players over £20 million. So Wijnaldum, they were interested in but wouldn't sign because he would have cost £25 million and they didn't value him as such.
Has the money run out at Spurs?
I don't think it's necessarily run out, but I think that Pochettino accepts that he has to shop in a different pool.
Because of the stadium?
Because of the stadium, because of... And listen, I've been at several press conferences where he's been very open about that fact, that A, he doesn't want to overspend, and B, there is a certain profile of player that he's looking at, and Zaha does fit that profile. Lots of Spurs fans, very unimpressed, not enamoured in one way, in any way, shape or form, at the prospect of Zaha coming. But Pochettino does like him, and he does feel that maybe he is the kind of player that can improve his side.
Wrapping things up, David, you know, it's going to be chaos what we sit here 36 hours before the window closes. It's going to be chaos, isn't it, over the next day and a half. Who do you think at the end of it will have done the best business in this transfer window?
You mean over the next 48 hours or where we've
overall.
Been?
Overall.
The way it's looking, I think probably Jose Mourinho and Manchester United have spent massive money paying Ibrahimovic massive wages, who's come in a free transfer. But if you look at the immediate impact they have made, they look as if they've bedded in and there are some, this real quality there, a real presence and a real winning entity. Guardiola's not done badly so far, but I'm just thinking, let's just see how that develops. You know, he's got a few things he's still got to work on, including getting some people out. But for me, do your business early, get these transfers sorted out, get them in your team, and looking at Mourinho, it looks good.
I would agree with that. I think Mourinho's done very similar to what he did when he won the title at Chelsea second time round. Signed players very, very early indeed, managed to get a pre-season under their belts. He started the season very well. He can offload players. City have bought well. They do still have players to offload, but they've bought very well. Good young players at City. Gundogan and Sané haven't even played yet, and you would imagine they will now slot into a team that's got their confidence up and is far more disciplined and fitter. I think as far as those two clubs are concerned, they've bought superbly.
I agree with the chat. Money is irrelevant. Identify your targets, get them, job done. Thanks for joining us on the Football Writers Podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.